one, two, death. There it is. All right. Did everybody hear that? All right. So just to kind of review, in Acts chapter 18, we read that Paul went through, he departed and he left, going through the regions of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. And after going through those areas, he goes on to Ephesus, and he spends quite a bit of time there. He spends a good bit of time there. And remember, he writes Galatians from there. We decided it's apparent he writes 1 Corinthians from there, which was carried by Titus. While there, the riot occurred, as you remember. And from Ephesus, he goes over to Macedonia. He goes up through Troas. Remember, that's where he wanted to meet Titus and find out word of how the Corinthians had received his first letter. He didn't find him there, but he goes on over to into the Macedonian region, where he does find Titus, and he is encouraged by the way that they've received his letter, and there apparently he writes 2 Corinthians just a somewhat short time before he goes on down to Corinth, where he spends 3 months. And that's in Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. So we find him there in Corinth, and now he is going to return. And while he's there, he writes Romans. So he leaves Corinth, and again, that's, you know, there's Corinth, and then just to the east, to the port is Cenchrea, and the port city's there. He's gonna catch a ship and sail back to, what he intended to do, sail back to Jerusalem. But somehow he's thwarted in that effort. He cannot get to, that. So he ends up, traveling north up through Macedonia again. And we'll see his travels, as he goes that direction. And in this time he takes, several brethren with him in this trip, and they go ahead of him, and he meets up with them there in Troas, I believe. Notice the names that are there in the first few verses of chapter 6. Aristarchus, remember where we met him? He was one of the men seized in that riot in Ephesus. Aristarchus and Gaius, both of them were identified there. They're his traveling companions from chapter 19, verse 29. Gaius here is said to be from Derbe. I guess it's likely to be the same one from his earlier meetings from Ephesus. So Aristarchus and Gaius, and Aristarchus, it turns out, we find out later that he is, in Colossians, is Paul's fellow prisoner, and he makes his way, whether he's as a prisoner or not, he's with Paul as he travels over to Rome, as Paul is definitely a prisoner. Timothy is mentioned here. And of course, we know Paul and Timothy's, you know, very close relationship, as Paul is a real mentor and close figure, close relationship between them. Tychicus, is connected with the church at Ephesus, and he carries several letters for Paul. Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, all mentioned as Tychicus is carrying those. Trophimus is an Ephesian from Ephesus, and Trophimus we'll find out here in the next chapter, a couple of chapters. he's the object of Paul's difficulties. Trophimus didn't cause it, but he's the one who the Jews, the hardline Jews, who are the chief Jews there in Jerusalem, accused Paul of bringing Trophimus into the temple, Trophimus being a Gentile. And it turns out that Paul had not done that, but they accuse him of it because they had seen him with him in Jerusalem. And also, finally, Luke is mentioned, as a party there. For quite some time now, the descriptions, the adjectives have been they did this, Paul did this, they did this, and that's been going on since Acts chapter 16. So it appears that as Luke had been traveling in this journey, Luke stops and drops off and stays in Philippi in Acts chapter 16, and then Paul keeps going on the journey, and now he brings him back, he catches back up with him. I guess that's actually the second journey. And then Paul, meets him and joins, Luke joins with him here in this journey, as they return back to Jerusalem. All right. Now, so he sets sail from, goes up north through Macedonia. And he sails from Philippi. He's there during the Passover, during the days of unleavened bread in verse 6. It takes him 5 days and he gets over to Troas. And at Troas, he stays there for 7 days. So in verses 7 through 12, we have the events of what takes place here in Troas. So on the first day of the week, on Sunday, the brethren gather together. They're there to break bread. And Paul talks to them. He preaches to them, studies with them. And his purpose is to, his intention is to leave the next day. But on this day, he speaks for quite some time. And the scriptures tell us he prolonged his speech until midnight. And then in verse 9, it says Paul was still talking longer. So even into the next morning, it seems, a Monday morning, Paul is continuing to talk with them, teach them, encourage them. So they're in the upper room. It's night. There's lamps lit. They're all there. And here we have the story of the young man, Eutychus, who is overcome by sleep, and he falls out of the window there, at the third story. And he falls down, and, it says in verse 9 that he was taken up to be dead. And Paul goes down, he bends over him, he takes him in his arms, he says, "Do not be alarmed, for his life is still in him." So Paul brings him back up, and they all go back up to the room where they were. They continue their discussions. He continues teaching, for a long period until daybreak even. And then Paul does leave. And the people were there were very comforted by, that the young man, Eutychus, was still alive. So, verse 13, they go, head to the ship. And, they continue their travels toward Jerusalem. They go through, Assos, they set sail for Assos, and they were intending for Paul to board there that he had arranged. He was going to walk on lands. So kind of the way the lay of the land, the ship has to jut out and go around a particular area, and he could just straight line walk that area and catch the ship at Assos. So Paul does that. He walks over land and he boards with them, there at Assos, and then they travel on to Mytilene or Miletus. And at when they arrive at Miletus, so Miletus is very near Ephesus, Paul does not want to take time because he is, as we find out, he's anxious, he's in a hurry to get back to Jerusalem, hopefully by the day of Pentecost in verse 16. So that's his goal in avoiding staying with the brethren here again in Ephesus. However, he calls the elders to meet with him here in Miletus, and the rest of this chapter is talking about this meeting that he has with the elders here from Ephesus. So let's take a look at that. And he recaps his time. He recaps his time that he's spent with the brethren. He tells them, you know how I've been among you the whole time that he's been with them, serving the Lord with humility, you know, at times with tears, trials that have happened there, the plots of the Jews. So he's kind of reviewing everything that's happened between him and the brethren there at Ephesus. And he says, I didn't shrink back from declaring you anything that you needed to know, teaching you, in public, from house to house, privately. Paul was busy helping them, teaching them, instructing them what they needed to know. And he says, now I'm going to Jerusalem, constrained by the Spirit, and I don't know what's going to happen to me there. So it turns Paul is being told by the Spirit he's going to be afflicted, imprisoned, and at every place that he goes to, essentially. And he's telling the elders from Ephesus here this, and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. And Paul's belief is that he's not going to see them anymore. He's not going to see them again. So this turns out the purpose of this meeting with Paul to these elders is this is the last time he'll get to talk to them and encourage them and tell them what he wants them to know, for a last time. So it's really interesting to read, someone's last words. It turns out that it's not the last time that Paul sees them. He thinks it is. But thinking about what the last things that you want to say to, people. And it tells you really what the heart and soul is of somebody. What you want to tell for the last time. And so we should really take to heart, what Paul says here, what's on his mind. So he tells them in verse 24, I know these afflictions, they're coming, but he says, I don't count my life as valuable. Paul had been through so many things, so many, persecutions and trouble, because of him, because of the gospel, because of preaching. He had confronted beatings and many things, torture and persecutions. And Paul has resigned himself that his life here on this earth is not valuable enough to hold on to. He says, I'm ready to finish my course in the ministry. And what is his ministry? What is his course? What's been his number one thing in his life that he's been wanting to do, that he's been doing? In verse 24, that is to testify the gospel of the grace of God. And he was going to do it until he died, it would be the death of him in the end. So he says, he tells them, I know that, verse 25, he's confident that he's not going to see them again. So he testifies, he's kind of wanted to set everything straight and make sure there's nothing between the Ephesians, the elders, and him. And so he says, I haven't shrank from declaring the counsel of God to you. I'm innocent of the blood of all, because he declared to them the whole counsel of God. So he's done his part. You know, when we read in the God and from the words of Jesus, we're the sowers, right? And God gives the increase. That's what our job is. And Paul has done that. He has sown the seed and is confident of his role in spreading the gospel. But he says, in verse 28, he warns them. He says, be careful. Pay careful attention to yourselves and to the flock. Take care for the church of God, because that church of God was obtained with the blood of Christ. Be careful with it. Pay attention to it. He says, I know after my departure, the wolves from among you are going to come in and they're not going to spare the flock. So Paul recognizes, you know, the wolves from outside that can attack, but what Paul's warning is wolves from within them. People from within their own numbers will arise up and draw away the disciples. So he says, be alert. That's the elder's role. That's one of the elder's roles, is to guard against that. How do the elders do that? They're in tune with and have a good rapport with everyone in the conversation. They have to have their finger on the pulse of the congregation and everyone in the congregation to guard against stirrings, rumblings, uprisings that can occur from within. So he says, be alert. He says, remember, for 3 years, I didn't cease to be, to teach, admonish you night and day. And now I commend you to God and to the word of his grace that's able to build you up and give you the inheritance among all those who are sanctified. I wasn't a burden to anyone while I was with you. As far as needing things, he said, you know that these hands minister to my necessities and to those who are with me. And he says, and at the end of this, he says, when he had said all these things, he knelt down and he prayed with them. So Paul and the elders praying together to God. And on their part, there was much weeping. They embraced Paul. They kissed him. They were sorrowful at the most hearing that they would not see him again. And so there's a real sadness to this, because Paul was, he came through to see them every time he could. He taught most of them. He was very paramount in their spiritual welfare. So they return with him, accompany him back to the ship, and he sets sail once again. So he continues traveling toward Jerusalem. Look in chapter 21, the first few verses. He comes and he sets sail. He comes by Kos, and the next day to Rhodes, and from there to Patara. And then he finds a ship crossing to Phoenicia. And there they sail south of Cyprus and on to Syria, and they land at Tyre. So they're back over on the coast. They're in the, what we call the in Syria, or the promised land as it once was. And he seeks out disciples there in Tyre, or in Caesarea, or in Tyre first. And then he makes his own way. From there, he stays 7 days. And notice what it says in verse 5 there in Tyre. He said, when our days there were ended, we departed and went on our journey, and they all with their wives and their children accompanied us until we were outside the city, and kneeling down on the beach, we prayed. So, it seems though, as Paul's, you know, message is continuing, you know, that this is the last time he's going to see some of them. So they're there to see him off, and they're all on the beach there on the Mediterranean, and they pray together, and they bid farewell, and they return home, and he continues his journey from Tyre to Ptolemais, and greeted the brethren there for a day. Then the next day they come to Caesarea. So in Caesarea, he meets an old or someone we find quite early on in the story of Acts, and that is Philip. And this is Philip, and it tells us that this was Philip from Acts chapter 6 and Acts chapter 8, who was instrumental in taking the gospel to the Samaritans, right? And so he stays with Philip. Philip, by now, he's settled in Caesarea, and he has four daughters. So he stays with them for a time. And while he was there, a prophet comes down from Judea, Agabus. And Agabus comes down and sort of confirms what the Spirit has been telling Paul for some time, that trouble was awaiting him in all these in his future. And Agabus says that the Spirit says this is how the Jews at Jerusalem will bind him, and he takes Paul's belt and binds his own hands, and he says this is how the Jews at Jerusalem will bind Paul and deliver him to the hands of the Gentiles. And as you can imagine, if one here received that kind of a message, you know, we would tend to encourage him not to go. Don't go to Jerusalem. If that's what's there, then don't go. And they cared for Paul, and they did not want to see, him face any more, trouble and difficulties and persecution. So they were urging him not to go. But what is Paul's answer to them, response to them in this? And he says, what are you doing? Weeping and breaking my heart. You know, Paul, what was Paul's goal? What was his intent? What was his priority and purpose? It was to do God's will, to go, to spread the gospel, to teach. And he was going to Jerusalem, and he did not want to be discouraged from that task, from that goal that he has. So he says, what are you doing, weeping and breaking my heart? For I'm ready not only to be imprisoned, but even to die in Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus. And he seemed to be expecting that very thing, for that to be the end in Jerusalem. He had plans. Where did he have plans to go? Remember what he wrote to the Romans. His plan was to go to Jerusalem, see the brethren, you know, drop off the money, you know, the collection for the saints that he had been gathering, do that in Jerusalem. And then what was he going to do? He was headed for Spain, right? And then he was going to stop by Rome, on the way to Spain. So that was his plan. But somewhere, you know, when he was with Corinth and toward in Macedonia, he was getting this revelation from the Spirit that, you know, things were going to be different. So he would not be persuaded, verse 14. And Luke says, we ceased in trying to persuade him and agreed that let the will of the Lord be done. And so they got ready and they went up to Jerusalem. and some of the disciples there from Caesarea went with him, bringing him to the house of Mason of Cyprus, and they stayed with him. And they came to Jerusalem, where they were received gladly. And we won't go into it, but there in Jerusalem, just kind of briefly, they get to Jerusalem. Paul is arrested, in part in due to, you know, Trophimus, who they thought, they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. A mob occurred, a riot occurs, and they're ready to kill him. So you can imagine Paul thinking, this is it. But who comes in and saves him? The Romans, right? The centurions, the Roman guards, they come in and take him away and bind him. So we'll get into that, on the next week. Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Right. So, the comment is referring to, verse 9 and the daughters of Philip here who said they prophesied. And sometimes that's used to show that, well, a women's role, that they can indeed teach. Well, it doesn't say that they teach. You know, there's a lot of room for them to prophesy and to reveal what's been given to them without doing it like we're saying. They can do that not in you know, assemblies. In other words, we can't assume and read what's not there in the text. So. Sorry? In which part? Oh, right there in verse 8. From this we don't know. It was just on the next day they departed. I don't know that we can tell what. It could. I don't know that the text limits us that. And we see, and it's a great point, when you look at some of the letters, Paul deals, even when he's remote, distance away from brethren, he deals with issues that they're having and rebukes them, admonishes them, as he sees the need. And he's not going to be there. That's his feeling. He's not going to be around anymore. And to do that. And in the absence of, I think what you're, a point with what you're saying is, in the absence of leadership, and even, you know, as stalwart a person as Paul has been, and with his courage, his dedication, his commitment, everyone looks to that type of person for leadership, for guidance, to imitate. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. So, and some of what you're saying is definitely because of Paul. I know that in, that was, and I can only compare it to what I know, I guess. But there was time when, in Brazil, when some were leaving Brazil, you know, some of the preachers had gone, and Gary and others who were leaving, coming back to the States. That was a real concern, because once, you know, that steadfast presence is absent, what's going to happen to the brethren who are there? because life, their lives are the same as it always has been. I mean, they're changed, they're converted, but you can go back into your old habits and things creep in, much less being attacked from within, as Paul's saying. That's good. Yes, absolutely. As the elders are given this role to lead, it's our job to follow. It's our job to make their job as easy as possible, to follow. What do they have? They have advice for us, wisdom, they care about us, and that's our duty. That's our job, is to follow. And we need to really search ourselves if we have a problem doing that. All right. There's one other thing. Any other comments? I was leaving this because I thought we'd have just a little bit of time. And Jeff had mentioned it. I'd actually kind of, it had slipped my mind that we still had this. We put together some years ago, and this was put together actually for the 5th through the 8th grade class. But it's sort of a mnemonic device that you can remember some of the chapter content. And it's somewhat helpful. Jeff reminded me of it. I remember some of these. I don't remember all of them. But anyway, if you want something like this, you know, I can email it to you, or print it off for you. You may come up with different ones. You can see, you might have a better names, titles for some of these. But anyway, I just wanted to show that to you. And if you want something like that. And any other comments? All right. Then we'll finish. Thank y'all.